And welcome to the September 1st, 2015 meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. We are ready to get underway. The board met in closed session and discussed a couple of student personnel items that we will move on to in just a moment. Is there consensus on the order of business?
Yes.
Okay. You guys okay with the order of business down there? We want to, you know. Okay. Gonna we'll ease you into this. Okay. Item 4.02, action on stipulated student discipline agreement, hearing one. Do we have a motion with regard to this item?
I move following the staff's recommendation.
I second.
All right. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, thank you. On 4.03, action on stipulated student discipline agreement, hearing number two, looking for a motion.
I'll move approval of the staff recommendation for stipulated expulsion of student number two.
And I'll second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? And abstentions?
One abstention.
Mr. Quisenberry abstains. We have a couple of minutes to discuss. Regular meeting of August 18th, 2015. Any revisions, changes, modifications, comments?
Now I'll move approval of the minutes of the meeting of August 18th.
All right. All in favor? Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Item 4.05, approval of our Measure D study session minutes of August 21st, 2015. Any discussion?
I will be abstaining from that.
Thank you. Okay, Catherine moves approval.
Second.
Jim seconds. Any changes, discussion? All right, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None, and Mr. Unger abstains. All right. Next, we are at 5.01, one of my favorite parts of the meeting. We have new student representatives who will introduce themselves to us. I hope we'll be seeing all of you throughout the year. We get a lot of good information about how our schools are doing from you. We look forward to this. So why don't we start at the end?
Hello. Is that too close? Is that good?
You're good.
Okay. Hi, my name is Bella Stumball. I am Associate Student Body President at San Luis Obispo High School. So our Tigers this summer have been involved in FFA, Skills USA have been practicing for sports all summer, and our Skills USA was ranked nationally in multiple competitions, as well as our FFA students who participated at the Mid-State Fair. So that's a bit of what they were doing over the summer. Something new that ASB has put on as a separate committee this summer is Tiger Crew. So we created a new student orientation for any student coming from outside the district. So any freshmen not coming from Laguna and any other students coming from other states. And our turnout was about 70 kids that were coming in that had no previous experience at SLO High. So we had 12 different Tiger Crew leaders who were from different socioeconomic groups and were involved with different clubs. And we called and wrote letters to every single student that was coming to our school from outside the district, and the response we got was incredible. Our day was small groups with Tiger Crew leaders, so they were assigned to a crew number, and then they were able to participate in activities, and there was a big scavenger hunt challenge where they got to see the campus as well as also be in a competitive environment, which was fun for all the students who were attending. And by the end of the day, we got phone calls and emails from parents saying, thank you so much. My child is no longer scared to come to the first day of school. So that program continued with the first day, where Tiger Crew members called and texted the different kids in their groups and said, hey, have a great first day of school. If you need me, I'll be standing by the big tree at lunch. And all 12 of our crew members went and individually found about, I think it was 20 kids who were walking or eating by themselves during lunch on the first day, and there was a group of, I think, 40 kids who were sitting together by the end of the lunch period, able to talk to each other. So that was something that was really special to see that was brand new at our campus. Along with that, it was regular welcoming stuff. All of ASB showed up at the White Gate and said hello to the kids as they were walking in to create a positive atmosphere for the first day of school. We sent out handwritten cards to every freshman saying, welcome to our school. We hope you have a great year as future Tigers. And then they could take that card and go up to our quad and spin a wheel that had different spirit prizes so that it was something fun for the first day. And they could have some gear to wear on our first Black and Gold Friday, which was last Friday, and we had our first rally of the year, which was very fun and a huge success. We welcomed new teachers. We welcomed all of our foreign exchange students who have already made plenty of friends and have been incredibly accepted and that we all love. So that was a really fun day, and our student section was completely full during our first football game. You would have no idea that we lost based on the reaction from the students on campus. But all of our sports are up and running. Our club rush is this Wednesday coming up, not this coming Wednesday, but the next, and we are very excited for this upcoming year. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Hey. I'd just like to say that as a child, and I think that is fantastic, and I can identify with what those kids felt like. Good work.
Thank you. Ivy?
Hello. I'm Ivy. So this year I joined Pack Beach, and I feel, like, really welcomed as a new student. We have an open door policy where I only go for my first through fourth hour. So if I wanted to stay and fix up on some credits or get ahead, I was able to go to any teachers, whichever one I felt most comfortable with, and they just kind of helped me stay on track for the whole year, and it's just really great. And I know that a lot of new students feel the same way. So this year at Pack Beach, we have a new social studies teacher. Her name is Lindsay Cooper. She comes to us most recently from Templeton High School, where she taught last year. But before that, she taught in Hayward for 5 years. She'll be covering U.S. and world history, government, and econ as well. She'll also be working on creating the PBTV news so that students will be able to broadcast current events that relate to the school. Speaking of new classes, in addition to continuing the skateboard building and remote submersible vehicle classes this year, we're looking for a grant fund for a wind turbine design and building class. Ms. Nairn is handing off her PE class and will be teaching a sewing class next marking period. The farm is absolutely thriving after a summer of impressive growth, and we're now selling our produce to the Paso Robles School District for their Culinary Arts Academy. We've now donated over 1,000 pounds of produce to the Salvation Army and Community Food Bank as well. Once the temporary Los Osos Valley Road Construction Program off-ramp at Cali Joaquin is removed, we'll be beginning our vegetable sales stands there. Corn, tomatoes, squash, peppers, herbs, berries, peas, beans, cucumbers, and they're all going to be organic. Pack Beach students will again all perform community service for Eye Care International, which is where we clean used eyeglasses as part of a long process that culminates with the glasses being provided to impoverished and indigenous peoples of third world countries. Last year, we actually cleaned and processed over 4,000 pairs of glasses in a 2-day period. Also on the community service note this year, in memory of last year, Pack Beach's Teacher of the Year, John Geiselbrecht, us as PB students will be participating in the Guts and Budge Beach cleanup on September 19th. Not only will we be helping to clean up our environment, but many students will be sponsored for the day with proceeds going to gastric cancer research. Due to the fact that we had such a large graduating class in June, we currently have only 49 students enrolled. We've added 13 new students from inside and outside the district and are working with the high school counselors to reach students and families that will benefit from being at Pack Beach. We'll keep you posted on our enrollment numbers. And last but not least, thanks to Don Addis and Kim McGrath for their work to bring Apex Computer Learning to Pacific Beach, and huge thanks to Power School Ladies and IS&T. Thank you so much for helping us with summer and our summer school. It couldn't have gone on without their hard work.
In water balloons with each other, and about 10 teachers got involved too, so that was pretty exciting. And then our third Wednesday, we had a maze, a blindfolded maze that we set up for mostly freshmen, but other people can join too. And we had about 30 people participating in that, and that was a pretty big success. And then Thursday we had assembly welcoming back.
On Thursday we had an assembly and we introduced all the new foreign exchange students, and also we had a dance off with all the new faculty members, and that was pretty fun. And we also included a fashion show with all of the school's new apparel that ASB designs themselves and sells themselves. So that was pretty cool.
So Friday at lunch we had music in the quad, and that was pretty exciting. And then we're planning on a pretty big homecoming dance and a homecoming parade before the football game. And we have
to leave if you need to. You're always welcome to stay as long as you wish, but we'll look forward to seeing you at future meetings.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. All right. 6.01. Thanks, Andy. Correspondence. We received a letter from Marcia Shep regarding hazardous trees at Morrow Elementary School. I think the board received a letter from Ms. Clover with regard to lunchtime at Baywood, and that's all I know that the entire board, correspondence to the entire board. And now is the time for public comment. If there is anyone here in our vast audience this evening who would like to address the agenda but you don't wish to wait, now is the time to do it. Anyone here for public comment?
Boy, I wish I had something.
I know. Yeah. All right. We will continue moving along to Superintendent's Update 7.01, Business and Budget Update, Mr. Pinkerton.
Yes. Happy to note, Mr. Plaza and myself toured all the schools the first 2 days of school and got to every single site just to see how things were going. And I think everyone, and I know the board has heard, it was just such a smooth start to the school year. The schools look great. So our classified staff did a great job getting everything prepared, ready to go. And so that was kind of the theme around as we began to talk to principals. And Anthony and Steve are going to go over some of those summer projects that they were able to accomplish this summer and really got the schools looking great. So that was really nice. I also had the opportunity to spend a little time with one of our bus drivers for a few hours on the first day of school. So I rode with Hector Martin on, and it was wonderful. I just have to tell you, riding the bus with Hector and spending those 3 hours going through the routes, watching him on the very first day of school, greet kids, seeing their reaction as Hector drove up, just so excited that Hector was their bus driver again. And so, just that kind of that family feeling. Hector, every single stop, would turn the bus off, step outside, greet the students as they came in. As they left the bus, he would stand up next to them, tell them to have a great day. And so it was awesome. And so for me, my plan is to kind of do that periodically. So maybe follow a custodian, maybe follow another one of our classified employees. So I'm looking forward to doing that and then sharing my kind of thoughts with the board and with the public and for the things that we see. So it was really great. There's a lot going on right now in terms of the budget. So again, we're kind of getting those prepared. There's a lot of, it's kind of a busy time right now in the legislature in terms of bills and what's going on. We've been asked by CASH and CSBA and other groups to send letters to our legislatures in regards to Prop 39 funds, in regards to the reserve cap, because those are bills that are still moving forward, and so hopefully those are things that we can ensure that are passed this year would be great for us as a basic aid school district and really for all districts in the state. So those are very good things, and that's kind of the key things right now happening in the business world.
Thank you.
Okay.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to address Mr. Pinkerton. Right. Any board comment? Mr. Buckner.
Just real quickly. Ryan, I was reading something, and I'm not sure where it was or whether it's passed or not, but is there something coming down about the state-mandated program where it's just going to be on a per-pupil basis? Have you heard that yet? So it'll come to us not based on...
So that's basically what's happening now, the Band-Aid block grant. I don't know that he can legally do that. Okay. And make school districts take the block grant, but the policies of giving, you know, basically not paying school districts or giving previous payments to all schools is really forcing everyone to do the block grant now.
Right.
So, Mr. Robinette.
Thank you. So the SBAC testing, the Smarter Balanced tests are completed. The data is in. It is embargoed from the public for another week or so. We get to look it over and see if there's any glaring issues, like these aren't our students, or you reported the wrong school, and we have to officially let the state know that this Thursday. But it will be officially released. The results will be officially released to the public next Wednesday, September 9th. I obviously can't share anything because this is a public forum, but there are a couple of things that are important to note when the data is released, published in the paper, all those kinds of things. And one of them is that this represents a baseline. This is the first year of this testing. It is a totally different, as you well know, totally different type of test and under different standards with a different rigor level. And so we can't compare it to the past at all. It will be, I'm sure, used to compare ourselves against each other and against other places. But it's really a starting point for us. And we think it's going to be most helpful in identifying those areas where we need to continue to put in work, especially with regard to those students who are identified in our LCAP, those gap students, foster homeless youth, socioeconomically disadvantaged EL students. And we will have much, much more to share with the board and the public at our September 15th meeting. As you are aware from our students, school opened. We are 7 days in, which means summer vacation is 282 days away. It's a leap year. As far as athletics are concerned, the board has realized you made a commitment last spring to increase the number of assisting coaching stipends at the high school CIF level, and our high school ADs and principals are very appreciative. We've been hiring those assistant coaches for the fall season. It's great news. We've also expanded our middle school athletic program in response to our students and our parent outreach and our DLAC committee. With the LCAP process, we had students asking for more opportunities for after-school sports programs at the middle school level. So beginning in the next week or two at both Los Osos and Laguna Middle School, we will have boys and girls soccer, girls volleyball, and a boys and girls cross-country program that is open to all students. They're competitive. The plan is to compete among themselves and with other schools, but to be all-inclusive and to get as many kids involved as care to. The other thing I will report on is the CASI test. CASI, the California High School EXO, it was suspended in June, and this left a fairly large group of students in California, over 5,000 students actually, who either had not yet passed the exam or had some credits to make up just to kind of get over that hump in order to take the exam again. We have those anomalies like fifth-year seniors who might go, in our case, to Pacific Beach to pick up a few more credits or to our adult school to pick up some credits. And it just left a lot of students in limbo. Governor Brown signed what is known as an urgency bill this last week, which means it doesn't have to wait to become effective. It becomes effective immediately when the ink is dried. And so he basically did away with the CASI requirement for the class of 2015, which would be this last graduating class. There is still a bill floating through the committee and the conference committee, and will perhaps end up on Governor Brown's desk, AB 172, that will address the immediate future of the CASI over the next year, two, 3 years. And we're hoping will give us some clarity as far as students not of the class of 2015, maybe students in the class of 2013 who show up at our door and say, I just need to do some units and take the CASI test. So we'll see. Our analysis is that the governor's action last week is sufficient for us to go ahead and give diplomas and officially graduate students from the class of 2015 who successfully completed all of their requirements. It doesn't appear, based on kind of past actions, that we need to take formal board action to change our policies about exiting exams. As I expect, as we see what happens, we will be coming back to the board and probably, you know, looking at our board policy with regard to exit exams once we find out what happens with AB 172. So it's our plan to see what students meet requirements in the next weeks and issue those diplomas. We have a few students, very few, that will be affected, and I think they'll be very happy about this development. And that's it. Any questions?
Any questions? Anyone from the public? All right. Thanks, Rick. Measure D update.
Yeah, so the next study session is September 11th. At that study session, the focus is kind of twofold. The main being looking at kind of the DSA design plan documents for the pool at Morro Bay High School. So I've asked Anthony Palazzo, Director of Facilities Maintenance Operations, as well as Joe Wilcox from KBZ Architects, to kind of walk the board through the process of how we got to that document, and then to physically go through the plan itself, kind of talk about it, and what the next steps are. So my goal is to hopefully this first project where we're moving forward to really educate the board on that, how we got to where we are now and kind of the next steps moving forward. And then Mr. Holcomb will be there as well to just talk about where we're at in terms of delivery methods and legalities and all the different things that he's kind of researching and studying in terms of how we'll proceed in the future and giving some advice to the board on that.
Anyone from the public? I know one, district and site staffing allocations. Mr. Robinette.
I'll go ahead and come to the front here. So like many of the things we deal with in public education, we have moving targets. And when it comes to analyzing how many kids we have in school, it depends on which day you ask the question. Because literally, we have students who leave us and students come to us every single day. Almost every day, without exception, a student will enter one of our schools and a student will exit one of our schools. And sometimes those numbers aren't even. So if you, for example, if you look at a typical year, like last year, we see some fluctuations over the course of a year. We end up with about, and this is pretty typical, the numbers aren't exact, it's probably not the best graph for you, but we end up with about 40 less students, outnumbers 7,500, 7,600 students. But 120 students represents five teachers. 120 students represents about $500,000 in program costs. So enrollment sometimes keeps me up at night. There is a magic date when enrollment becomes official. It used to be called CBEDS Day. It is now called CalPADS Day. Don't ask me to do the acronyms. It is basically an October 1st count where the state wants to know how many kids are in seats in the school system, 0.3% growth. If you can go to the next one, Kim, I'll just show some individual school populations, so it's kind of almost interesting to look at. Our elementary schools vary in size. Teach is our smallest, but of course it serves 4th, 5th, and 6th grades. It only serves 3 grade levels, so it's fairly large for the population it serves. Our largest elementaries are Bishop's Peak, Los Ranchos, and Pacheco, Pacheco being the largest. Our middle schools are now much closer in their enrollment, only 100 or so students off, because, as you know, Los Osos Middle School has a 6th grade program that Laguna Middle School does not. The high school populations have remained pretty stable from last year. Los Ranchos and Sinsheimer grew by about 25 kids each this year. So pretty significant growth, and that is something we'll need to keep an eye on. Both those schools, both Sinsheimer and Los Ranchos, now have 3 kindergarten classes. And when you have 3 kindergarten classes, it's a group you kind of follow up as they go. It looks as if those schools may grow over the next few years. We added a teacher to Sinsheimer this year as part of that. Question?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, the growth at Los Ranchos, was that due to, or do you have any sense of, was it due to
enrollment schools, and we pretty much know what's going to happen there. Teach, we were able to, I think, get every student in. We had a little waiting list there, but it winnowed down, so we're good there. But okay. No, not because of open enrollment.
Thank you.
Bishop's Peak was, if there was any surprise, it was Bishop's Peak. It is up about 55 students. which is a lot. You know, it was sitting closer to 400 last year, and it's up to 455. We added a teacher, you know, a week before school started, and it is hard to imagine what we may do in the future there. We pulled the Teach School off that campus, partially because of the growth we were seeing there. And we will probably need to really closely monitor open enrollment requests at that school next year, perhaps close it off to all open enrollment except for siblings, which we normally do. We may have to even knock on some doors and check the status of families, because I have a feeling we have our fair share of false addresses wanting to attend Bishop's Peak, and that's illegal. I hope I'm wrong about that. We know that there is more on-campus housing at Cal Poly. It may have freed up some family units, but that increase we weren't able to predict that we would have that many students showing up at Bishop's Peak. On the other hand, Del Mar is an interesting one. Del Mar was growing kind of by leaps and bounds just a few years ago, and it is down about 40 students. And it is our most transient elementary school. That just kind of goes with beach communities. If you talk to people in the CMR, they'll tell you that Grover Beach and Pismo has more students in and out, and it's the same as we have at Del Mar. But it appears that we're losing some school-age children in Morro Bay just based on those numbers, and that'll be something for us to pay attention to. Obviously, we will pay attention to the housing developments on the south side of San Luis Obispo to see what they portend for our future enrollment. The last major city developments, we've had some developments off of Broad Street, but the last major development in San Luis Obispo was all those units near Costco, which is now many years ago. And that was supposed to generate a bunch of students for us, and it just didn't happen. We didn't get a lot of school-age children from that development, still don't. We have obviously some, but not to the extent that we were expected. Before I move on from this little slide, we do have strange phenomenons that happen. I love looking at them. We sort of have this giant class going through our district, and they are now in the 10th grade. So our 10th grade class is by far our largest at both Morro Bay and San Luis Obispo High School, about 20% larger, almost 100 more students than, say, our first grade class. It's kind of an interesting phenomenon. As those students move through in 3 years, we may actually stabilize or shrink as a district because it is that big of a group. And I don't know why that happens. There was something in the water in the year 2000, I guess. At least we're not facing the situation the district was in the late 40s and 50s. You know I'm a history buff. Yeah. Kim, if you can show that last one. Val was going through some old files, and she came across this one last week, and I was kind of intrigued. So this really represents the post-World War II baby boom, and it was definitely in effect in our district. We nearly doubled during those 12 years between 1944 and 1955 and kept growing in through the 60s, but massive growth in those years. So that's the San Luis School District. It was not San Luis Coastal at that time, and that would include the junior college that we ran, because of course we were responsible for junior college back in those days. There was probably in the early 50s 100 kids who went to junior college down the hill as part of San Luis Obispo. Anyway, the other thing we keep our eye on with enrollments is the effect it has on class size. And yeah, there we go. Thank you. We take a lot of pride in keeping our class sizes to a manageable level. These are where our numbers are right now as of 7 days into school. The fourth through sixth grade classes are a bit higher than last year right now at 29-1 as an average across the district, but still much lower than most districts. We're really pleased with our low K numbers. Grades 1 through 3 is right where we wanted them to be projected at 24-1, and these class sizes are all real consistent with last year. The grade 7 through 12, 26-1, it's an interesting thing. I mean, you look at that sometimes and think, wow, why are those classes so low? And at the middle school and high school level, our resource specialist teachers are included in that count. Whereas
13 years ago, 14 years ago, it was down to 180 students. So it's really come around, and it's got a great reputation. I know it's just a wonderful school, so I'm really
happy. It's one of our most stable school populations. People who go to Hawthorne don't leave Hawthorne. They don't ask to go other places that much. And at least for, you know, I'd have to look exactly through my numbers, but for the last 5 years, it's been sitting right there at that 330, 340 mark. It's one of the easiest schools to predict what's going to happen to. But, yeah, they're all nice numbers. You know, we have small, nice small schools. It's a wonderful thing, but they're all healthy in terms of the numbers they have, and healthy into the future, it looks like.
Thank you. Mr. Robinette, you mentioned that we have 5 combination classes. I think last year we had 9.
Mm-hmm. So 16 the year before, I think.
So there's one might sense a trend there. But I'm wondering, of those 5 classes, and this is, you may not know this right off, you know, the top of your head, but do you know if those classes resulted from a site-based decision to create a combo rather than, you know, have a very large class for that, whether teachers
yeah.
were involved in making the decisions about whether or not they wanted to do that?
Partially. I mean, we have combination classes. I should look up to make sure I don't want to give the wrong data. 2 at Los Ranchos, 1 at Pacheco, and I believe it's 2 at Hawthorne. And so that's where they reside. And some of those, I would say, no, it's not a teacher choice issue. It's just the numbers are where they are, and there's just no way around it. If you have 41 kids in the second grade, let's say fifth grade, it's very hard to create 2 classes of 20 and 21 and have, you know, big giant numbers someplace else. So it's usually going to result in a combination class. What I will say is that in the cases where we don't have combination classes, those are almost always teacher driven, where teachers will say, look, I'll take 27 second graders as opposed to having 23-1 in a combo class. And so where we have numbers that might seem a little inflated at a particular grade level, it's because teachers have said, I'd rather have those.
Paul?
Thank you. Excuse me. You may not know now, but I'm kind of interested in how many of our Morro Bay High School incoming freshmen came from Cayucas.
A lot.
Could you be more specific?
I think we're probably about 20 students from Cayucas Elementary the 8th grade program at Cayucas Elementary that are at Morro Bay High School. My understanding is there's 1 student that went from Cayucas to Coast Union High School, and there's others that went to private school, other settings, but we have almost all of them.
How are they going to field their 8-man football team?
I want to know how they're going to do their golf team.
Rick, do you have any idea what the...
So it'd probably be close to 26, 27-1. And it's an interesting thing because you always think of high school, you know, why don't we have 30-1 at the high school level when we're... but, you know, high schools are... They're tricky animals. You know, you have certain singleton classes that, you know, you might only attract 13 or 14 students in, but you don't want to drop the program. You know, the numbers vary widely in a high school setting. And so it's an interesting number. I mean, if you go to San Luis Obispo High School, balance those things out. But it's probably sitting about 26-1.
Okay, thank you.
Jim? And our class size ratio also includes those traditionally large classes such as band and PE and so forth.
Correct.
Okay.
So it cuts both ways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Correct.
Anything else? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. 8.02, summer maintenance projects.
All right, I'm going to do just a quick intro for Steve and Anthony as they come forward and kind of go through the our summer maintenance projects, as well as what I've asked them to do is for Anthony to really talk about systems that we've established here in the district since they've come on far quickly, as well as where we're headed into the future.
Okay, good evening. Well, we're back. It's been a long, busy, crazy summer. So Ryan asked us to give a little update about what we were doing. So what were we really doing? Because a lot of it is underground, above ceilings, and hidden in walls. But we'll just give you a kind of a brief overview tonight of sort of what are we setting out to do, bigger picture in terms of the department, and then how we've translated that into some sort of boots-on-the-ground activities. And I want to say here, one of the lucky things we are here to have is Steve, our Energizer Bunny, Annie and Arnie, you know, then taking care of the transportation and the operations side. And so a lot of this doesn't happen. None of it happens. Doesn't happen without that. None of it happens without them. So what did we do? About a year ago, this time, Annie, Arnie, Steve, and I sat down, locked ourselves in the superintendent's conference room, and came up with sort of a bigger vision of what we wanted to do and how we wanted to operate as a department. And so we kind of came up with our mission and our vision and things, and, you know, and they laugh, and but I still pull it out every so often and say, remember, guys, remember how we're going to operate. And so the main thing is we wanted to provide safe, secure, and healthy environments for our students to support education. That's what our department does. But then how are we going to do that is we really decided that we want to operate as one department with multiple disciplines. And that's very different than multiple disciplines that happen to be under one department. Okay, so that was a very clear distinction that we wanted to make. And you'll kind of see as we go through, a lot of this is all collaborative between the three supervisors within our department. And as we move construction into construction, that's that fourth leg that we need on the table to kind of help hold that up. So go ahead and kind of keep moving along. So I'm a systems guy, okay? I'm a systems guy because I've worked in organizations and I've worked in companies that have had a high amount of turnover, you know, busy time in the economy, et cetera. And a lot of the institutional knowledge as people, staff, and things change gets lost as the organization evolves. Unfortunately, I came into the organization when all the supervisors save one were brand new, had been there within less than a few years. And so it really became evident that we needed to put some really good systems in place, not complicated, but some simple systems in place that kind of documented and sort of, you know, memorialized how we do things and what we're doing. So we came up we're starting to come up with sort of these systems at this point. I won't read these off, but I'll kind of highlight a couple of them that have really kind of impacted the way we work. And one is the master custodial schedule. It's been huge as a tool for our custodians and our principals to have good, open, honest conversation. And the other thing is our deferred maintenance plan. That's just been a huge change in the way we try to maintain and identify, foresee, and then maintain our facilities. And then obviously we've got Measure D coming down the pipeline, and so a lot of the procedures manual will just keep
going. Mr. Palazzo?
Yes.
I'd like to know what a school dude is.
Well, it's funny because the picture of the school dude, they kept saying looks like me, and I'm like, no, it's not me. School Dude is a work order software system. So what we currently have is an online system that...
I thought it was somebody I could maybe meet, but I guess not.
No, he comes around every so often. The dude is here, yeah.
He abides.
Yeah, he abides. I fell right into that, didn't I? We have a current work order system, and it's fairly archaic. I hate to use that term, but it's very labor intensive on our end. It's very frustrating for the inputter or people requesting the work order, and there's not a lot of feedback as to what's going on with the work order, because a lot of times a work order will come in, we'll go out, assess it when the teacher's not there or the principal's not there, we'll order all the parts, and 3 weeks later the parts will show up and we'll put, you know, fix it, it'll be fixed and no one will ever know. So the school dude system, one is much more user-friendly. It allows a bigger, broader base of people to be able to input into the system and put requests in. Gives much more control to the principals and the site administrators as to what's filtering through. And then it gives feedback as we're sort of chipping away at something. So, you know, if there's a broken window, we go out, we measure it, we order the glass. It might be 2 weeks before the glass actually comes, but we may have ordered it that afternoon. But this gives feedback to the instructor, the requester, if you will, that, yeah, we're working on it. We're not getting 10 requests of the same thing because they think it didn't stick.
It's paperless. So the current system, we print paper, we pass it around, it requires numerous signatures, and then somewhere a long way down the road, we take paper and we put it back into a computer to save it. So this lives in an iPad, a computer, email system. We never print anything.
So all of
maintenance has an iPad and access to computers. So I just filter things along. It can be a teacher. It could be an email to me, and I create the work order, but it lives in the system. We don't start printing things and losing things, and then they make multiple requests for the same issue. So it solves a lot of problems for us.
Thank you.
And that's just actually one piece of it. It's got capital equipment tracking software. There's a whole series of modules to it. We're trying out module one right now.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So we'll go a little bit more into depth here in a second. So custodial master schedule. So one of the things that's always been sort of a mystery, I think, to some folks is you know, how much custodial time does each site need, and then how is each site cleaned? And what was became very evident is that all the sites were being cleaned completely differently. Now, there's good and bads to that. Each site has different needs. Each site has different sort of parameters that they're working within. What was become very evident was that custodians were getting pulled into a lot of different things, you know, clean up aisle three, then we've got to do crossing guard duty because the crossing guard person's sick, things like that. And so it wasn't to eliminate those kind of tasks being done by custodians, but it was to assess the time that it takes to basically clean the school, and then all those other tasks that need to be done, how do those affect how the school's getting cleaned? And so this basically was simply an inventory of all the spaces on the campuses, classrooms, restrooms, multipurpose rooms, etc. A time standard based on their size of how long they take to clean. So a multipurpose room takes, you know, 1 second per square foot or 10 seconds per 10 square feet, etc. It's all calculations. And then it spits out a number of hours that the school should take to clean based on the staff. And ironically, or strangely enough, the way we had it staffed was about what this calculator showed, but it just gave us some science and some data. And so that as we change schools around, as we move buildings off, as we increase our schools, as we renovate our classrooms, we'll now be able to modify this and then appropriately staff our time for custodians at each of the sites. The other thing is that we wanted to make sure that each of the sites was given the same amount of time to clean their relative or respective amount of space, and that if they chose to, say, clean some spaces less than others and wanted to use that time for other things, they had that flexibility. But this gave them that tool to have the conversation between the principal and the lead custodians to be able to do that, as opposed to, well, I want every room cleaned every night, but I need this done also, and you know, not running into a lot of overtime issues. So overall, the custodians and the principals have seen to be pretty positive about this, and that they now have a tool to have an open and honest conversation. We did meet with all the principals and all the custodians several times on each of the sites to go through this, make sure the inventory was correct, make sure, yes, this is how we're cleaning, and you know, here's how we're going to adjust our cleaning to match this, or here's how we're going to adjust this to match the way we clean. But everybody now has a parity among all the sites in terms of the time they're cleaning based on the inventory of their campuses. So,
Mr. Palazzo?
Yes.
When you calculate the amount of time that it takes to clean a site or to perform the custodial duties at a site, then in the workday, do we allow additional time for the things that we know happen, like the custodian has to go up on the roof to get the ball, might have to do it a couple of times, you know, does the composting, does various other
There's a little things. Bit of cleanup aisle three, as we call it, time in there, but that's fairly finite, to be quite honest. And so it puts it on the day custodian, really, to kind of handle those things, and then really puts the cleaning component onto the night custodian. That becomes very evident. So a little bit of that is cooked in here. A little bit of, you know, what we call permit time or office time is cooked in. So the custodian has those types of things that they can kind of do and have some flexibility within that. But that is cooked in here. Their break time is cooked in here. Their security, you know, opening up the school, closing down the school, all those things they do are cooked into this.
Putting the flag up the pole.
Putting the flag up, yep, all of that.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. But it's in terms of the best tool that I've kind of looked out into the world and found, this really seems to kind of capture how we're doing things.
It really
seems
helps
like I'm sorry.
It really helps protect the custodian, to be honest with you, in terms of them getting pulled off and doing a bunch of pet projects and different things at the site. So it really is a positive thing for them to focus on and to really have that good conversation with the principal about what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, and then the principal disseminates that to the staff, mm-hmm. because it seems like forever the custodian was the go-to person for everything. You didn't know how to get done.
They also get blamed if their classroom doesn't get cleaned or things like that. So this, it's good.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
And, you know, some schools were getting cleaned every night because they had a really strong custodial team, and some schools just weren't able to keep up because they had a good custodian team, but they had so many classrooms, there's just no physical way to do it. And so, you know, some sites were getting every classroom cleaned every night, and some sites every 3 nights the classroom was getting cleaned. And so this helped sort of level that out and kind of evens out the score, if you will. So all the classrooms are being cleaned in a similar fashion and a similar duration.
Well, I went to one school where I was told by two staff members that they really love their custodians and that I'm not supposed to say their names, and so I won't because they never want them to be taken from them.
Oh, I usually seek them out and I find them and I take them. No, that's one of the challenges, in all honesty, is when we have a good custodial team, is they tend to promote up. And so the site gets very fond of them, and you know, and we don't want to hold someone back or hold, you know, someone's career path back. So we, you know, unfortunately they tend to promote up. So
well, they're loved. But they're loved
where they are. Mr. Quisenberry?
Well, having worked in three different school districts, and I was just calculating 8 different schools over the years, I would say that San Luis Coastal always has had a great tradition of starting the year off with the buildings in great shape. This year it seemed even a notch better, but I commend the custodial staff.
Scenario. One of the things that was very interesting that I found in the first year was the 30 people kind of packed into a 10 by 10 space in the front of the BG&T office, all trying to write a check or, you know, pay with some sort of shells and other things. iTech Solutions to come up with a online bus pay and application system, and so this is completely online. It can be done from any computer that has internet access, smartphone, from the library. We're getting a couple of computers set up in the BG&T office, so if someone happens to come down, boom, they can just go right there to our, you know, we can just direct them right there. We can put them on one of our computers. They can go to their school site and sign up for this. We've trained all the secretaries. Again, it's as easy as filling out your name, picking your route, and hitting submit. Free and reduced goes through here. You can pay online with a credit card or with a one-time use credit card or a debit card. And we've even taken some checks here and there. We're working with people as we kind of transition. But the idea is that we don't have somebody every day going to the bank with, you know, checks, handling money, eliminating that component of it, and eliminating parents having to come into our office between the hours of 7 and 4:30 and taking off work to buy a bus pass. It just, this helps, what we feel helps parents just easily order this remotely, pay out with a credit card, and you know, they get a receipt that says this is your temporary bus pass, and then our new system for bus passes, when we get that up and running in the next week or so, we'll then just start distributing those to the sites. So we can kind of go on to the next thing, the next item. And then we've started to set up our construction standards in our model classroom. And I'll kind of move through these quickly, but what became very evident is that every site within our district was getting onto Amazon and buying a new, different piece of furniture, ordering different color paint, painting their walls, buying carpet, buying different light fixtures, and we had one of everything in the district. And so we've kind of worked with Steve's crew and the maintenance department on our construction material standards, so the types of carpet we're using. The real important thing here to keep in mind is that if we only have to stock 2 kind of filter cartridges for faucets, that's much better than the 8 that we have to stock now. If we can just get it down to 40 different colors of paint instead of 220 colors of paint, that's going to be much better. So being able to do those types of things, standardizing, yet still giving some flexibility within our standards, that's going to help our maintenance crew immensely. On the other side, then, on the user side, is it became very evident that we're going to be building a lot of new classrooms or renovating a lot of classrooms into new classrooms. And so setting out to make some of the big classroom decisions now rather than waiting till when we're trying to get everything through the DSA and kind of get through the process, let's make those decisions now because we kind of know the classrooms are all going to be about the same size. They're all going to have 4 walls. They're all going to have a ceiling. Let's start coming up with some guidelines for how we're going to lay each of our grade level classrooms out. So we've got our K-6, our 7, 8, and our 9, 12 classrooms, and we've got all the parts, pieces, and elements that are going to go into those so we can work on things we don't like, work on things we do like, technology changes, we can adjust to that. But this is really going to be something that we'll start to beta test. And what we wouldn't want to do is, you know, some of this furniture is a little on the cutting edge. Well, if we buy one classroom, that's much better than buying a full school's worth and then not liking it. So we'll really start to get some feedback in the next year or so on these model classrooms.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Oh, thanks. Hi, Anthony. So I noticed on this second in from the left, I believe that's where I am, at the bottom, it shows, I'm not sure I understand this, I just want an update on terminology. Steel, the round tables, half table, round half tables,
mm-hmm.
Steel case mediascape, small D-shaped table with attached totem stools. So the stool is physically attached to the table?
Yeah, we're probably not going with that one, to be honest.
Thank you.
This is a bunch of our concepts.
Thank you.
But the idea of the D-shaped table with that's more movable, that's where we were going with it.
Okay.
So
thank
yeah.
you.
And so these aren't set in stone by any means.
Because unfortunately those chairs would be set in stone and
yeah,
the kids couldn't
would.
Move in. Yeah.
Right, right.
Thanks. And then the other, there's two types of chairs you're going to be testing, a height of five pedestal and an armchair or something, chair with arms?
Yeah, there's a handful of different chairs we're going to start rolling in.
Okay.
As part of this model classroom, we're going to bring a couple of them in to B3 or somewhere, maybe even down here, mm-hmm. and just have them set up and let people come and sort of put stickies on them and make comments, etc.
So having been the smallest kid in the school forever and having to sit in those really tall chairs or the really short ones, so of these chairs, are some of them height adjustable that you're working with?
Yeah, we've talked about height adjustable desks too, so that we even do stand up and sit down.
Thank you.
Don't freak out, Ryan. No, but we've kicked around some ideas about having some more flexibility and adjustability into these things.
Appreciate it.
So, okay. Next one. And so then these are our manuals. And again, kind of back to, you know, as we're starting to roll out Measure D, as we start to get more staff involved with Steve and some of the project management crew and administrative crew that will become involved to help with Measure D on our side, as well as all the different vendors we're going to have, contractors, architects, inspectors, you know, budget folks, all the different team players that are going to be part of this, probably several hundred people when it's all said and done that will come in and touch Measure D at some point or another over the next 7 years. We wanted a sort of a set of rules and guidelines and processes that we were all playing by. And so that's what we really set out to do with our budget tracking and a development procedures manual, our design procedures manual, and then our construction implementation procedures manual. And these were all documents the district has had over the years, but they just had kind of fallen into, you know, they just were outdated. And so we went in and completely overhauled them, really kind of gave them some new fresh, you know, parents, visitors, etc., people that aren't necessarily need to know the nuts and bolts of all of our procedures, we kind of have a little Reader's Digest version that shows how things work for folks that may just be involved in one or two small pieces of the overall program. So, okay, so we've been working on that, and that's been quite an undertaking to kind of get that up to speed. And we're just about done with the last document, which is the budget tracking procedures manual now. So we'll go to the next one, and then this is the last kind of system we'll talk about, is our deferred maintenance plan. And this really ties together a lot of different assessments that Steve's been working on over the last year. It's our asphalt survey assessment. It's our playground safety assessment. It's our gas leak survey that we did last year. It's our roofing assessment. It's our facilities master plan, which includes all of our ed specs, all of our Measure D, everything. It takes all of those plans and starts to pull them together. It takes our construction standards and starts to puts everything into one place, and it starts to highlight which projects we need to start to undertake first based on the highest need. You know, this asphalt's failing, this roof is ready to go, this building needs to be painted, and starts to put them out in time over the next 5 years, and then puts prices to those so that we can start chipping away at these. And it starts to give us a gravity of scale of what this stuff costs. And so you can see just on you know, our plan right now, this is kind of a minimalist plan even. This is not attacking everything. This is kind of what we think we can kind of do with the funds we have available, as well as with some of the Measure D funds. You know, and you're over $1 million each year for the next 5 years. That's $5-6 million in the next 5 years just to get us kind of caught up. And so it breaks out by all the different elements within the deferred maintenance plan that were allowed under the old system. That's kind of gone away, but we use that as the framework. So it's asbestos, it's electrical, fire alarm, floor coverings, HVAC, paint and lead, so lead abatement and painting, plumbing, roofing, and then wall systems and locks, and then paving are the other things. So those are kind of the categories that we're working on in this deferred maintenance. And so that it just goes down on the left side as to each of the sites, as to who's going to get it and what those projects are over the next 5 years. And it's basically a fairly simple Excel, so we can start making calls and getting either plans put together, specifications put together, and getting contractors on board to get this work done, or do it in-house if the project does allow for that. So, and then we'll start to take this and dovetail it in with Measure D work. So if a site needs a fire alarm and a bunch of paving and they've got a Measure D project coming up, we'll take that project, rope it into a Measure D project, and we'll start to check it off this list. But we'll get it done as part of a larger project. So Measure D is really going to help us start to chip away at this list that's been developed and the need that we have out there.
Mr. Buckley.
So, yes.
Just to put this in perspective, can you, or Ryan, remind me, what's in our deferred maintenance budget for this year? So I get some perspective on these million.
Projects. I mean, that pays for Steve's position. It pays for the maintenance workers. It pays for all those things. So, Steve, what's your overall... Do you know what your overall kind of?
Yeah, it's just under $500,000 when you take a couple different sources.
It's about the budget.
Yeah.
That kind of really puts this into perspective for me, and I really appreciate that. Thanks.
And a lot of catch up.
Yeah.
A lot of things that we need to do in terms of it. So it was kind of an interesting dynamic in talking to Anthony and Steve today about it. It's kind of like owning a car or owning a building. Is if you're a business owner, you know you're going to have things you have to fix in future years. And so though your building may be worth $10 million, you have these liabilities, you know, in the future that you're going to have to pay for. So it makes your building not worth as much. But so it's the deferred maintenance plan has been huge in terms of overall planning and getting a better perspective on the scope of what we need to accomplish.
So the one comment I guess I would make for me in going through this exercise is how did I a year ago plan to attack the asphalt that's much needed when I didn't even know how much asphalt we had? Well, I know now down to the few square feet, we have over 1 million square feet of asphalt in the district. So I can plug dollars per square foot, and I can start to come up with a sense of magnitude, right? How big is that? Well, it's $4-5 million. So, well, it won't all be done this year, but now I can start to plan, right? Over 5 years or 10 years, I will come up with a proactive plan of attack to get us back where we should be. The other thing that's part of this exercise is, for the first time that I know of, we have an accurate inventory of every light fixture, furnace, Measure A, and say, guess what? 5 years from now, there's going to be a big bill. So let's start being proactive, and let's not act surprised when it comes to bite us.
Thank you. And we're living on borrowed time on some of those units. A lot of our equipment mechanically, especially at our high schools, our middle schools, is all original equipment still. So it's.
Marilyn?
Do we qualify for state rebates on purchasing air conditioning units and heaters and other things?
Yeah, so we are using Prop 39 funds. Our biggest bang for our buck, because we did under Measure A quite a few of our heating units, we don't have a lot of AC units in the district. So it's really hard to show a huge cost savings of replacing HV or heat or ventilating units when you're not air conditioning, because that's the big electrical and the energy user is the AC side of the house. Where was I going with this? So rebates, we're using Prop 39 money to actually do our lighting, and then our second tier of projects, if Prop 39 money is remaining, then we're going to attack some of our older HV units.
And what about PG&E? No.
There's
not
a lot.
I'm only thinking this because yesterday we insulated our attic, and my husband looked into it. Well, maybe there's an energy rebate for that. Well, there wasn't, but there were rebates out there and available, but more for municipal work
and
yeah, the one we just got that we're dovetailing with our Prop 39 is for the gym lighting, and it was like a 10% rebate on our expense. So it was a little bit, but it wasn't. It's been a lot of work, and it's been very difficult to get. We're actually in really good shape energy wise. It was tough as part of Prop 39 to come up with enough measures that brought our usage down and got our what they call our SIR factor, savings and return on investment, I think is it's a formula that the state's using. It was difficult to get there to the 1.05 that they wanted us to be at. So we're in pretty good shape energy efficiency wise.
So most of the maintenance, the deferred maintenance, is
it's
other things.
Yeah, it's just, well, it's like the HV units are 20 years old now, so we just need to replace them. And so we'll go in with much higher efficiency units. So we'll go from an 80 to a 93 efficiency, which is, you know, number-wise, 13% more efficient. But they're not finding a lot of rebates for those. We're always working with Steve over at PG&E on different ideas for ways to get rebates. And so the last one they had was this lighting thing. What's interesting, though, now they just made me think of something, is that as the state has cramped down on the green building code, PG&E's kind of backed off on some of their rebates because now it's code, what PG&E used to sort of incentivize. Some of those are going away now even. But, yeah, we're always looking. Yeah, I'm working with Steve on that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So with that, this was our project list, kind of what we started tackling in January and what we've been working on over the last... We'll retain those as they started to look a little tattered. We did a huge grounds cleanup at Baywood, and we're continuing to do that. And then we've, you know, as you all know, we've done the centralized irrigation system district-wide, and we're going to continue to expand that program and hopefully continue to see some increased savings on that. But maintenance was where the bulk of the work was done, and I think two of the highlight projects are getting Wi-Fi into our two high schools, at least at even the temporary level, so that we're getting them the support they need in terms of that technology. So with that, we put together this list. You can kind of read it. I won't read through it. But then we put some photos together, and I'll let Steve kind of take you through what all's been going on. So.
Well, I feel very fortunate because I feel like I get to do the fun stuff. One, I think pictures more exciting than a whole lot of words, but I get to be the guy that's boots on the ground, and at the end of the day, the principals, the teachers, the employees of the district, as well as the students, they come up to me and they think I did it. And I have an amazing team. So grounds, like he said, grounds and transportation and the mechanics in the yard, they're just constantly helping each other. Nobody gets hung up on whose discipline and whose job that is, so that's made my job really, really easy. So. There was this opportunity to look at the inventory and say, okay, how do we attack this? You know, it can't be done in a year, but long term, so let's chip away at it. And so we purchased our first three new vehicles in, I think,
20 years, probably.
Well, I think the newest thing we had was like a 2004, and we inherited that used from PG&E. So in more than 10 years, we got three new vehicles. We got two trucks like you see in the top left picture. Previously, that individual was driving an old passenger van that had been C-tripped out and outfitted for tools. Three-quarter ton, and then he throws it full of plumbing parts or whatever, and he's maxed out before he leaves the yard. So this is a one-ton truck that's got the right suspension and engine, and it's set up for his job. It's all utility. He's got storage on the outside in those door bays, both to the passenger and the driver's side, as well as the back doors that open up to this huge cargo area that's got shelving on the inside. And then we had him outfit them as they needed them. You can't really see too well, but they've got their plumbing vices on the back, so as they walk out to their truck and grab their tools, everything they need is set up for them. And if they have to get out of the weather, some of them have little workstations set up on the inside. It has lighting inside. It has power inside. This is a huge leg up, and we're competitive with the industry. This is what a professional in that trade should be driving. And then, as Anthony described, just getting the same logo on every vehicle in the district, whether it's old or new, updated. It's our new graphic, our new logo. I feel like we should take pride, whether it's an old vehicle or new vehicle. I think it's awesome to be part of this district, and I want everybody that sees our trucks to go, oh, my gosh, there's another representative of the school district. And to see them on your site, like, wow, these people do come and go, and they are taking care of business for us. So it's really exciting, and this is just the beginning. You know, we're going to hopefully do a couple more this year and the next year, and in 5 years, you know, we'll have 20, 30 plus new vehicles in the district as needed. And that's IS&T has vehicles, right? Transportation has vehicles. There's a couple of staff vehicles, grounds vehicles, and then the maintenance vehicles. You know, that's it's quite a fleet that we have to maintain. And it's also good for the mechanics because, you know, that you can only put so many transmissions and engines things before your labor and your expense just far outweighs the value of the vehicle and the effort going into it. So,
Mark?
Just, I mentioned this earlier in the year. I think this may be a good opportunity to mention it again. I'm going down South Street and all the
congregation guy, Joe Carrera. And so he'd been in a van that we just kind of cobbled together to make an irrigation vehicle.
Now, Joe's 6'4", so you got to envision him crawling into a van trying to pick out, you know, PVC 90s and find his things, you know, packed into this small van. Now he's got a utility truck. He doesn't have a box like this. But he's able to get to everything, and it's what he used when he was in the private industry in his own company. And so, you know, we're kind of getting back to what, like Steve said, what the industry is doing, because they're typically figuring things out a little quicker than even we are. So copying what they're doing is really a nice thing to be able to do.
Yeah, and we didn't just blindly say, here's what you're getting. You know, we went out, and it wasn't a free-for-all. We said, okay, here's the couple of choices, right? For your discipline, which would better suit your needs. So in Joe's case, he'd been here 2 or 3 months, and I said, hey, we're getting ready to order you a new truck. And he's like, are you kidding me? Right? He's looking at what his peers are driving. He's the newest employee in the district, and he's on the list, but it's, you know, based on the needs of the vehicle he was driving. So he feels like he's won the lottery. He asked if he could, you know, if his wife could meet him somewhere in town so she could see it, because he knows he can't drive it home. I mean, he's that excited, right? He just can't believe that this district would take that good of care of him. So he's stoked, and that's kind of that's word of mouth, right? He's telling people, you would not believe where I get to work. So go ahead with the slides. So moving on to Measure D, our first kind of make-ready work that's coming up out at Morro Bay High School is the relocatables. It was the 600 wing. There was 3 portables there for the longest time, and they were old portables. They were in pretty rough shape, and then this is the future home of the swimming pool. So in the top left, we started to mothball and clear out, you know, everything in those buildings. We did all the sampling and testing for asbestos, and sure enough, it was all over in the floor tiles and other things. So we had them all abated. Then we went through and did all the utility work to, you know, cut the power and pull all the fiber and network out. So there in the lower left picture, we've got a nice clean site. We got all the initial work done to prep for the start of the year with the pool this next year. And
so we can start the pool at any time now. So that was the one impetus, was to get off of that campus before summer was out, get the teacher relocated into his new classroom, and then be ready when the pool comes out of the DSA, boom, we can start construction, not be held up by, you know, trying to move or disrupting a class by moving them mid-year, et cetera.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, this probably was one of the biggest efforts we made this summer, not just to get rid of the old buildings, but to make a smooth transition for that teacher and set him up, and even though it's a temporary space, but make it feel like his needs are being met. He's got the storage he needs, the computers he needs. That's, and everybody that I've talked to just says, oh my gosh, it looks so much better. You know, it's the first thing they say. And they're excited that this is just the beginning. We're going to work with some other landscapers in the area, as well as our grounds group, this fall to keep that effort going and really clean up that site. So there's quite a few things, obviously, in these slides here, but we had...
Can I just say that it looks great at Baywood? Did a really nice job.
Thank you. So there's really 2 things that I'm focusing on in this picture here. We did the beginning of this, I guess, springtime, a gas leak survey. So you come out with this equipment, and they look for gas leaks. Everywhere we've got gas piping underground, if it's going to leak, this meter will pick it up through any of the smallest crack in the concrete, asphalt, along the edges of buildings. And so they, 5 years ago, did a survey, and we attacked all those big problems. And we're not talking big risk in the standpoint of, like, flammable and kids at risk, but we're talking, you know, enough of a leak that you want to take care of it now so it never becomes an issue. So they give you high priority, medium priority, low priority. So we're in a good state of repair. The second thing, you see some bathroom urinals. We had a couple bathrooms here at the district office where in the past, and I don't know the history, but we'd shut them down and we kind of mothballed and just, you know, built a cover over them, but we had a need for a handicap accessible bathroom. So I guess my goal going forward is anytime I find something that's not as it should be is to just deal with it. It's going to cost me more today, but it will cost us even more in the future if we just ignore it. So we removed those urinals. We, you know, chipped down the floor to a new surface. We dealt with all the plumbing in the wall correctly and made things were capped off correctly. And then we opened up, you know, and gave it one big handicap accessible stall and dealt with the grade changes at the doorway to address the needs of this student here at the district office. There are many ADA accessible needs that we're going to approach in the near future. I've got a long list of things that I'm just chipping away one at a time, so I'm definitely not ignoring it. I'm excited to bring solutions to these kind of challenges. At our BG&T corporate yard, I'm kind of embarrassed to say that at some point this was the bus lounge for our bus drivers. It was like a 12 by 30 building that was on stilts. It served its time. It was in desperate need of removal. So that went away this summer, and it allows us to free up some space for the mechanics adjacent to their building, and they've got some equipment that they want to go there in the new future. But that was just one of several things that we took down this summer to just deal with the eyesore and the safety hazard.
We also renovated two portables in the back.
Yes.
So that we have a bus lounge now.
Yeah, so that's worth noting, absolutely. So we had two that we spent quite a bit of effort on, new carpet, new paint, redid all the lighting, the electrical, the drop ceilings, and then one is a training room, and then the other is the bus lounge. So they like quadrupled the space they have, and they have, you know, it's dry, it's and new roofs. So we put new roofs on those and HVAC.
They have running water, they have electricity, they have heat.
Yeah, all things.
The floor is completely solid as opposed to spongy or holes. So, and it was just, it become just an issue of, you know, some dignity, to be quite honest, for our bus drivers, having them have a nice space that's theirs as opposed to a closet with, you know, holes in the floor and you know, no running water. So,
absolutely. So this is Los Ranchos. In the last year, you know, we spent time at Del Mar last summer, and then this winter was Sinsheimer for a new playground, and so the most recent playground to be installed was at Los Ranchos. So we worked tirelessly through the spring with the teachers and with the principal to really give them, you know, I held the purse strings, so to speak, but as many options as we could to make it their own. You know, instead of me just giving them a cut sheet out of a catalog and say, here's what you're getting, you know, what do you want? Well, some schools love swings. They're one of them. You know, they have 10 swings, and they're always aligned, and it's kind of amazing. And then other schools, you know, the kids fight over four. But they got to pick and choose what they wanted within reason. And so now that they see it at the day of the grand opening, you know, the kids are like looking around, and every one of them is like, I got what I wanted. You know, and there's pride in that. So it's fun for me to get to be a part of that. And then we had, you know, growth in the TK and the kindergarten. You know, there's constant fluctuation there. But my guess is that way back when, we had two kindergartens with bathrooms, and that was kind of what was needed at that time. Well, now we have a TK program, and sometimes you have that third kindergarten. Well, now those kids don't have a bathroom in their classroom, so there's extra work, you know, with an aide to make sure those kids come and go safely. Well, we looked at that and realized if we just cut a hole in the wall, we can give direct access from that classroom to that bathroom. And so, while it sounds simple, there's quite a bit of moving parts to that, but that really improves the quality of life. Now, one teacher can manage a classroom by herself, and that really changes the way she operates. So she was totally excited for that, and I'm just grateful that that's something we can do in-house and not have to farm out. Another big project is at Teach Elementary, and so we've got, well, it's very similar to the Sinsheimer campus, but you've got all these classrooms with these alcoves, and again, it was all the 9-inch asbestos tile that's been there since the 50s, and some of it had been carpeted over, so we started with the sampling and the testing and all the hazmat abatement, and then went back with a combination of floors. We looked at the way those spaces were being utilized and said, you know, instead of just putting carpet everywhere with a little wet area over by them, this linoleum, the colored tiles you see there, that's linoleum instead of VCT. It's a non-wax product. It costs a little more at the time of purchase, but over the life of the product, you're really driving down your maintenance costs, which is what we're interested in as a district.
Minimizing our chemicals going into our spaces. That's yeah. The other thing is just to have to handle that many less chemicals is you know, a huge win for us.
Mm-hmm. So then in the two photos in the top on the right was the MPR stage. I don't know why, but it had an old spongy padded carpet, which is not conducive to... Yeah, it was residential carpet. It's not conducive to the kinds of theater and production that, you know, you think kids would come to expect. So that got replaced with some black plank tile that's kind of a flat black. It's perfect. It's a little padding to it, but it's a solid surface for those kind of production look like for all of our students in the future. Go ahead. Then out at Loam's, we've been working a couple years on the driveway at Loam's. The trees that we all come to know and love over time, they grow up and the roots are powerful force and they start cracking up the slabs of concrete. So last year and again this year, we removed several slabs and cut out the roots and poured those back to just really improve the quality of the driveway and the entrance. And then in the top left photo and the middle left photo, this was one that I was just, again, it was trees. There had been four trees in a courtyard, but over time they'd heaved up this slab of concrete to the point where the middle, instead of being the low point, was the high point. And so when it rained, water ran back to the classrooms and into the classrooms. It had become a point where they were putting, you know, sandbags and dams when we'd have those few rainstorms. So I knew from a safe standpoint we had to do something. And so rather than try to cut and grind, we just pulled that whole slab out. We regraded the whole thing, and we went back with pavers. And so now we've got picnic tables and umbrellas out there, and the staff's currently using it like a little staff lounge. So that's great. And then the pictures on the right, this is the Loam's kitchen. The top middle picture is what they call the speed line, but that's where the kids come through the lines and they get their food, and the serving carts would be down the middle. And then the top right photo, you're looking at what's left of a kitchen after we pulled all the refrigeration and the furniture out, all the cabinets underneath. Hats off to my guys. I went in there and I discovered that that piece of stainless steel countertop that's more than 30 feet long was one seamless piece of construction after it had been permanently installed, and there was no way for us to physically remove it from the building. So my guys found a way to anchor it from the ceiling and hang it so we could come in and put brand new epoxy flooring down, which gets us back in the good graces of the local health and safety code, and then put it back together. And these guys worked tirelessly for weeks on this, but I think the product that we've got today definitely sets the new standard. If in the future all of our kitchens could look like this, we're definitely where we need to be. So this is out at Del Mar. The top picture on the left is one of the portables that again came out. It was that same era from the 1960s. It was on its last legs. We were painting over rust previously, and just in good conscience, we couldn't continue to maintain it. So there it is in the lower left, and then now the empty space on the right. So that was not something that was worth salvaging and giving to anybody else, so that got munched in place. But it's preparation for what's to come. Whether there needs to be another building in the future or that just becomes outdoor picnic table space, workspace, outdoor teaching space, we definitely had to get rid of that building. There wasn't enough of value for us to continue to maintain it. And then the pictures in the top are part of the gas repair work that we did out at Del Mar. I didn't know this at the time, but anytime you see a long straight line of green grass on a commercial campus or a school campus, there's a good chance you have a gas line down below. Gas, when it's leaking, initially acts like a fertilizer, and it makes your grass look really, really green. And then soon after, it makes it really dead.
Are you
going to
tell PG&E about that?
Yeah. So it made it really easy to identify. Those repairs have been made, and I can sleep at night knowing that an area where kids spend time, there's not gas leaking under the soil. So this is maybe one of the lesser-known projects we worked on this summer. UMAN. So we have, for those of you who know, the 55 miles of fiber network that run between the town and the coast and back as a loop. And where it's underground, we have minimal risk. We're in good shape. We own and operate this. Basically, we joke we have our own Google. We don't pay anybody else for service. It's ours to own and manage and maintain. But in the case of the LOVR bridge, right up Los Angeles Valley Road bridge that's going in, we had a cable that went airborne across the highway. So you can imagine anything that's airborne is potentially a liability, whether they hit the pole or they physically hit the cable. You know, that's a liability for us. So there was an opportunity as part of this project to go underground and through the new bridge and then take that. It's one more place that we're vulnerable and take that out of service and get back underground. So that's what this is. PG&E is placing the poles in the top left, and then literally a week and a half ago on a Saturday morning at 5 a.m. without anybody knowing.
He made that sound really easy. But connecting that cable is extremely difficult and specialized, and so having the right people do it, it was quite the feat to get that done.
It was a better part of a year planning in terms of working with the city and Caltrans and
all the different players, the PG&E, gas company, AT&T, Digital West, everybody had a little something on that poll. So it was quite a feat on Steve's hands there to kind of get that all coordinated. And he's been going to the LOVR meetings for the better part of 6 months now. Yeah. So he's been sort of intimately involved with it. But now we're done, right?
Yep.
We're out.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, we're the first utility on the new pole. And just, you know, from the construction side, you know, that being my background, they were just stoked that I kept coming to the table saying, we're ready to do our part. We're not going to be the ones to slow down your schedule. And as soon as, you know, it's available to us, we're going to jump in and do it. And I called them at 11 o'clock on a Saturday morning, said we're done, and they just were kind of shocked. So I think we as a district are representing, you know, our part of that very well and playing well with others, so to speak, in the construction world. So that's a source of pride for me. So here's just some more photos of some of the gas line repairs. You know, you identify a gas leak, you dig down, and you find some discolored pipe. The yellow pipe is the new pipe that's going in, but whether it was galvanized or steel pipe, there's codes for gas line. And one of the things I discovered along the way is that somewhere in our distant past, we had compromised the type of materials we use and used things that probably should have never been used for gas pipe. So rather than me fix my leak and just, you know, cover it up and move along, we're going to address those concerns. I could never, I've got three small kids, I couldn't sleep at night knowing that I'm covering that back up and just moving along. So that's my commitment to you guys and to this district, that as I find stuff that's suspect, I'm going to deal with it. So I feel good about all this work we did this summer.
You should.
And so now we're resting and we're dreaming about Measure D. So we are, this kind of says it all right now in terms of where Steve and the crew is. And so they're having dreams of Measure D. So that'll be the next big thing. I mean, that's really the next big push, and that'll start to really take on a lot of this maintenance stuff on the sites we're working on. But the sites that we're not going to be working on are still going to have a lot of the same things that you saw tonight. They're going to be next in line to start getting these. So that's where we're at. I know that was kind of the main thing, and we were told we had 3 hours to give this presentation. Kind of chop it down. So
I just wanted to say that I think you guys are our unsung heroes, and thank you.
Thank you.
And please thank all your teams and crews and everybody who work with you. I mean, we know this is not a job undertaken by one or two people, but it really takes a team effort and people who have other responsibilities as well, and working hard on this all summer. Our thanks to them.
We will share that for sure. Okay. Thank you.
Is there anyone from the public wishing? Okay. All right.
Yeah, let's thank you.
Chris, your light is on. Did you have anything else?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now get back to work. Okay, I'm going to read the items listed on the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like anything pulled. 9.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 9.02, disposition of surplus property. 9.03, acceptance of donations. 9.04, approval of purchase orders. 9.05, approval of warrants and payroll. I would entertain a motion for it.
I'll move approval of items 9.01 through 9.05.
I have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Very good. All right. Anything on advance agenda? Mr. Unger.
I would like to propose that we do a study session on special education, and particularly special education needs of students with emotional disabilities, how the system works, what kinds of supports we have in place for students, and things like that.
I'll second.
All right. Any further discussion? Everyone in favor of seeing this on a future agenda, or we can bring it back to the next meeting?
I would support it. I think if we have a majority of the board members, we can skip that second step if we wanted to show consent on that.
All right. I'll
make a quorum on that.
Is there a consent thumbs up?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Reports by board members.
Let the board know that while you guys were hearing about Measure D, I was in Chicago at National School Boards Association meeting. It was a leadership meeting, and just it was a great meeting. It was probably the best National School Board Association meeting I've gotten, and it was very it just reaffirmed what it is that we do as school board members, and then just the importance of relationships, especially even among teachers and students. And we heard from some really inspiring people. We up the 40% that they promised us, promised school districts. We're currently getting about, I think, about 15%, something like that, from the feds. That's money that comes out of our other programs to support really needy students. More money for early intervention programs. I don't know if you all remember the sequestration a couple of years ago. It's going to be back, and the hope is that it won't cut money out of special ed and just education programs in general. We'll be talking about that. Another interesting thing is trying to get some standardization for autism assessments and best practices nationwide, because that's going to be really important stuff too. So those are things we'll be talking about. And then the final thing, and I would just encourage the board members and anybody listening to the public to call, especially our Senator Bill Monning, and tell him to support SB 799. SB 799 is what I would call sort of a mitigation of the reserve cap, and some more workable language for that. I think he could probably use some encouragement to support that. So thank you.
Mark?
Let somebody else talk about. I was pleased to be able to attend the ribbon cutting at Los Os Ranchos. But for me, the highlight of the day was getting hugged by the new mascot of the school, dressed as a roadrunner. So I was able to have that hug.
And you weren't terrified of him?
I had to wait till some kids did it first.
Okay. Catherine?
Thank you. I, along with Mark and Ellen, attended the ribbon cutting, and I was hoping Steve would still be here so we could thank him again, because it's such an innovative playground. It's beautiful and well-built, but it's also very creative in terms of what was chosen for that playground. So thanks to Steve for that. And I particularly loved what Principal Marley Schmidt had to say about the learning that takes place on a playground. And she asked the children as well as the adults to think of a seminal moment, a memorable moment that they experienced on a playground. And it's amazing how you immediately travel back in time to that moment you conquered the curly slide or fell off the teeter-totter, which thankfully we no longer have. But that was very fun. And also I was able to attend the first day of pre-K at Pacheco. And Monica, surrounded by 15 four-year-olds, is an adorable sight. In any case, some of them crying, some of their parents crying. But that's a wonderful program. I'm so pleased to be able to visit that program and hopefully be a part of it. If I could only overcome being monolingual, I would be much more helpful there, but at least I can deliver their snacks.
Yes, I had the pleasure of being at Morro Bay High School's back-to-school night. That was great. And actually, earlier in the week, the Monday the 24th, it was a late start Monday, and then they had a special 8 o'clock session for the 20-something exchange students.
Yeah, about 20.
And it was really nice. It was done with the two counselors, Elena Smith and Jennifer Sheridan, and the ASB, and I think they made those kids feel very welcome. They went through the various paperwork they would have to fill out and so forth, and that was great for me. It was informative for me. And then this past Friday, I went to notice some new faces teaching sixth grade over there, I had a little chance to go to Baywood, too, and watch them on Friday for a little bit, and had a discussion about how kindergartners today are more ready and less frightened of going to kindergarten. So anyway, it was fun, and I hope to be at a few back-to-school nights this week also.
Thank you. I would just add that I attended the ribbon cutting as well, and it was really fun. I learned a few things from Harper, a first grader that will help me through life, one of which is if you're feeling nervous, take some deep breaths. And words of wisdom from Harper I'll hold close. I also had an opportunity to speak with two different high school parents, one from Morro Bay, one from San Luis, whose students transferred from other schools in the area to those high schools, one in a sophomore year, one in a junior year, and both are expressing great regret that they hadn't done it sooner, that they feel there are opportunities there for them that were not available at their previous schools. They met friends immediately, both participated in the respective first day of school, welcoming events, and they're now persuading other family members to just go straight to get back into San Luis Coastal District from wherever they are now. So good reports all around. Marilyn?
I feel left out of the report giving, and so I'd like to report that we insulated our attic. And that I spoke to my mother and my sister on the phone this week. We're currently harvesting tomatoes, cucumbers, and carrots in the backyard, and only one of our four chickens is laying, but we're hopeful that the other three will get back on board. Thank you very much.
Mr. Millar.
After hearing Mrs. Roger report her life, mine seems so insignificant that I won't take anyone's time.
Thank you, one and all. Our next meeting will be September 11th. For our Measure D study session in B3 from 9 to noon. Thanks very much.
0-0 there, Marilyn.
Oh, don't tell me.